right, let's do Matthew 22, beginning of verse 15. A great text has an opportunity to preach in context. Let's just read it, and I'll say a couple of things. Matthew's favorite, one of his favorite consecutive words is this little word, tata, which means now. Oh, is this being recorded?
Yes.
I love the Bible. I believe everything.
Thus saith Gibbs.
And God is, well, I'm a Lutheran, so he might be sovereign. Yeah. That's right.
Not sure.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, that's a great comment, you know, and the classic instance of this is when a student approached me last year and was a little afraid that St. John was a synergist, because he wrote in chapter 1, as many as received him, to them he gave right to become the children of God, right? So he didn't like this, that St. John would say that we receive Jesus, because that sounds synergistic. I said, well, sounds like the Holy Ghost to me.
Yeah.
Verse 15, then going, poroithentes, the participle from the deponent verb, poroiomai, going, it almost hardly need to be translated here, actually, but then going away, understand that, the Pharisees, elabund a symbolion, they took counsel, just kind of like our English idiom. Now, hupos plus the subjunctive expresses purpose, for this purpose, so that pagadeuzozen, they might ensnare him en logo, in a word, or by means of a word. Here's a good example of en with the dative is just about as flexible as the dative case, right? Just about as flexible. So here I think it's expressing dative of means. And we have this, a pagus is a trap, and now the word pagideio means to snare, right? So the evangelist, it's really a nice prick because we have everybody's motives here. And so we set up, we see, among other things, the utter genius of Jesus of Nazareth. Of course, he had a lot going for him, being the Son of God and so forth. But he does a great job here, and everybody's amazed when it's all done. So anyway, they make a plan, then verse 16, and they send to him apostelos, and we've got a number of historic presents or historical presents where, even though it's being told in past time, the present indicative is used. It's a feature of narrative in Greek, just like we say in English. Yeah, I went to the mall and I saw, you know, my friend, and then he says to me, blah, 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 blah. You know, we do the same kind of thing. Anyway, they send to him the disciples of them, their disciples, with the Herodians. Nobody knows who the Herodians are, so we'll just bleep over that. Saying. Now notice that the participle here, legantes, is nominative. So even though they sent their disciples, it's still the chief guys who are doing the saying. Mm. So it's really them who's doing the speaking now. In a sense, you know, they're the messengers. They said ko amar pharisaioi, or something like that. Mm. Or the parashim, or whatever it would be there. Saying, teacher, vocative. We know from oida, perfect form with a present meaning, we know that true you are true, and now here's one of these feminine noun, one of those unusually and somewhat rare second declension feminine noun, hey hadas. We know that you are true, and the way of God in truth, didaskes, you teach, and umele, this is a little verb, mello, is often used impersonally, it means it doesn't matter, or it's not a concern or a care. So literally, it is not a care to you concerning nothing or concerning no one. In other words, you don't care about anything in the sense of you don't let yourself be swayed by anybody. Okay, so they're starting with the compliments, right? Now they explain, you know, this phony spiel is a shtick is explained for gar ou blepes es presbon anthropon. You don't look into the face of men, which means something like you don't show partiality, right? It's kind of like the other idiom in Greek. Does Hebrew do this, Paul, to receive the face?
Before the face?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The face,
right? Yeah.
In the face,
yeah. Right? Well, it's lifne, but it's also, does it do that with a verb to receive the face of someone? You know?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, maybe it's just come over somehow from another cultural influence. Anyway, you don't show partiality. Now they try to spring their pagus, their trap. Say then to us, what does it seem to you? Okay, dokeo means to seem. Existent, this is their great word. The Pharisees love this word. Is it proper or is it lawful and it always takes an infinitive as its subject, to give a kainson, a poll tax, kaisari, to Caesar, a or u not. To give a poll tax to Caesar or not, is it lawful or not? Right? Now the narrator kicks back in his voice, tells us about Jesus' awareness. But gnus, this is aorist participle from ginosko. It's actually aorist participle active. It's a funny form. Jesus, knowing the evil of them, their poniron, their poniria, he said, why te me peradste? Why are you testing me, hypocrites? Question mark. Epidexate, from epidectomy, the aorist imperative active, second plural. Show to me the coin of the poll tax, the numisma to kainsu. Now we have this little shift of subject, hoi de, and they, pros enenkon, from pros pharaoh, brought to him a denarius. And he says to them, of whom this image and the inscription? Whose is the image and the inscription? They say to him, of Caesar, Caesaros. Then he says to them, now with an aorist imperative, the normal imperative, give therefore the Caesar things, the of Caesar things to Caesar, and the of God things to God. Okay, he just silences them, verse 22. And when they heard, they marveled, and leaving from aphiemi, him, they op erchomide, they went away. Now, what are you going to do with this text? Traditionally, this text is made an excuse to preach on Romans 13. Right?
Sounds more like April 19th.
Well, yeah, that's it. That's right. See, traditionally, we've taken this text, and the recent CTCR publication, which is a fine publication, even has as its title, in talking about government, render to Caesar the things of Caesar. That's the title of the document, okay? But you sit this in its narrative context. Jesus is not giving information about the proper relationship to government. See, in this, you read the context, it's debate, thrust, parry, attack. You know, they're trying to get him. He's trying to, we'd have to assume, in love, wham him over the head and show him their error. He's in Jerusalem. He's been hailed as king. They reject him. The conflict in the story is building. So his answer about Caesar is simply a way of deflecting, see, their phony trap and trying to expose the real issue, right? And the real issue is how to relate properly to God. In other words, you could preach on this text and talk about government, but it's not really about that, see? What it's really about is how do you give to God the things that are God's, right? And in context, it would be by acknowledging that Jesus is, in fact, who he says he is. Okay. So it's really not a text about government, say, so much as it's a text about these opponents of Jesus, right? And their phony trap, and he turns the tables on them and says, give to God the things that belong to God. Now, to preach this to a Christian congregation would be a little bit challenging, right? Because we should not simply say, and you're just like the Pharisees, right? Because they're not. They're baptized. They believe in Jesus, see? So you have to make the application of the law, for instance, a little more subtle than that, right? And a little more flat out accurate than that, okay? But it is a text about what really matters, not, these people are opposing Jesus and seeking to oppose his will, you know? And Jesus turns the tables on them and says, He gets rid of their phony questions. That might even be an entry point into this text. What are phony questions in life? You know, and then let's get to the real question here. So you might be able to do it homiletically that way. And that would be much more faithful to its context and to its really... Then he can be accused of being an insurrectionist or something. See? So again, he deflects the question because he knows it's a phony question. It's a phony question.
But you know, they're in verse 62, they're kind of setting it up in a kind of a powerful argument, though. We know that, you know, you're the truth.
Oh, yeah.
You teach the truth of the way of God and truth, and you're not a respecter of persons.
Right.
So if you're only respecting God and everyone else is equal, yeah. What about Caesar?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, they're very clever. See, yeah. This is really, it's a familiar story, but it's very, I mean, again, he is the Son of God, so he has a lot of debating skills. But I mean, really, it's a wonderful move on Jesus' part. Yeah.
Well, I guess I've always heard this text in relationship to the joke on the Pharisees that they weren't supposed to be in possession of the coin anyway. It being an idol to Caesar.
Well, see, I'm not sure if that's true. I mean, they simply used the currency of the day, you know, and there are some coins around that are minted, you know, with Herod's likeness, for instance, when Herod the Great. I'm not sure if that's actually right, if that would have been an issue. You know, for instance, the Roman standards are, they're standing in the temple courtyards. You know, they can't get rid of all the vestiges of Rome. And maybe some people might have objected to that, you know, to the very fact that they held a coin, you know. But, you know,
with a graven image, I
exactly,
guess.
Exactly. Well, it's not an image of God, it's an image of Caesar. So, right. Right, no, it's a text about parrying a phony question and making sure that we're asking the real question. Yeah, Rob?
You made a comment, I must have been 3 years ago, either you or Dr. Bells.
Probably Bells. I don't make memorable comments.
I scribbled in my text about the irony of on Tuesday, Jesus is talking about giving to Caesar what is Caesar's, and on Thursday, God's is given back to him because Jesus Christ is the Son of God.
Yeah.
By the same people.
Okay, yeah, you could work that way, especially if this were being preached in Holy Week or something.
Yeah.
Because this text comes back again at a different time of the church, I can't quite remember when. So, yeah. I think it's probably time to go for class and things, right?
Can we start earlier?
Probably.
We always run out of time.
I know. Well, we can try. We're also crammed. We're actually 5 minutes shorter just because of the new schedule.
Right.
So that's part of the pressure. But yeah.
When
and I'll actually try to show up every week, too.
There's no classes on Wednesday before this.
At least I didn't make you cite.